Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm super excited to be here. Today on The Psychology of Work, I'm joined by Andrea Gunn and Liana Paris, leaders and partners at Sharpen Strategy, which provides free strategic support to animal protection nonprofits worldwide. Andrea spent nearly a decade as EVP of the Humane League, leading initiatives in organizational development and movement building. Liana brings 15 years in social impact from UN conflict zones to advising nonprofits on strategy and performance. Andrea and Liana, welcome. I'm just so excited to have you here. And anything you want to add that I didn't share about you, you know, anything about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the interesting things about Sharpen, when I try to explain it to people, the way that we help groups is not that unique, but what I think is unique is that we're very narrowly focused on farm animal protection organizations. So not even just animal protection, but organizations that are working to end the abuse of animals raised for food. It's a small industry. And we can elaborate on that industry if that's helpful.
Yeah, it's super. Yeah, super interesting. Anything you want to add, Liana?
No, for now, I'm excited to get started. You know, and just to complement what Andrea is saying, you know, we are focused in this one area, but we bring expertise from different places and different experiences. And so happy to talk about all those pieces. And yeah, excited to be here with you.
Yay. Well, I can't wait to hear about it all. You know, I think what really struck me and sort of getting to know you in this way is that you're both coming with such like a deep bench of expertise, but the common denominator has always been purpose-driven organizations. So what are the most common leadership pitfalls that you notice, especially in sort of an advocacy or animal advocacy space?
Great question. And actually, we were just giving a talk on this. And so there are a few things that are at the top of our mind. And maybe I'll say a couple and then Andrea, you also can. But the number one thing that's been on our minds recently and that we see happen a lot is that people, they're trying to do too much. Their goals are not focused. And that has a lot of different effects on the organization. If you have too many priorities, if you are trying to do things that are maybe things that your organization is not best at, you are actually taking away from what you could be doing that you are best at, and also taking up that space for somebody else who could be doing that. And in the end, a short way of saying this one is, you know, do you want to lose six or win two? And it's much better to try to stay focused, even though the temptation is to just add more and more and more because you want to have more impact. What about you, Andrea?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really hard when you're working on mission-driven work and you see just like how big the problem is. You know, in this case, there are 10 billion animals raised and killed for food, even just in the US alone every year. And so I think advocates feel the pressure. They feel like this is a huge problem and I need to do something about it. And especially in outside the US, some of these organizations, they're the only organization in the entire country working to help animals. And maybe they're trying to focus on farm animals and people are coming to them for dog and cat issues and so on. So I think there's a big temptation to do it all. But as Liana was saying, it makes it, if you're trying to do it all, then you're probably not going to be doing it all well. And then beyond that, I think a big one is people are so passionate. Most folks get into this work because they care. They care a lot about animals. They care about making the world better, but they're not necessarily coming with like this vast leadership expertise and like, you know, all this training in how to run an organization. So we see folks that are very passionate about doing the activism. Maybe they're having some impact. They start to get funding. They're able to grow a team. But then it's hard to shift into that mindset from being an activist to being the leader. And so there's a lot of like not very intentional leadership. So like letting kind of culture happen by accident or not taking that time to like reflect and learn and grow. It's just sort of like taking each day as it comes, which, you know, when it feels so urgent, I can totally understand that temptation. I've been there myself. But in the long run, you're not able to build that really resilient and strong organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see a lot of parallels, you know, with startup actually, as you're talking about this, like thinking that there's this big problem that you want to like solve. But, you know, I see it in all these different, you know, just like kind of floating around the space, like being with a bunch of startups, like, it's like when you try to do it all, you can't do anything. And so, but feeling that pressure, right, of like, I want to solve this thing. And I just know that's not like the smartest approach. But then it kind of requires the person to sit with that sort of discomfort of trusting that it's better to focus, you know, and I imagine it sounds like you see that a lot too. And I could imagine that even being more so in your industry where it feels so like urgent, you know, like something bad things are happening or animals are kind of being abused in some way. Like if I don't act, then that's going to happen. So how can I sort of hold myself back? So what do you, how do you see this? The other thing you noticed was really like culture happening by accident and having these sort of, you know, kind of unintentional leaders in some way. And we see those in all different kinds of organizations too, sort of these individual contributors who are really good in their space, but then now they're leading organizations and people and don't really have the skill set. Like what are some of the things that you see that sort of come up in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, when folks are not thinking about their culture intentionally, like one of the ones I see the most is the org starts really small and they think, well, everyone gets along really well here, so we don't need to invest time in developing our culture. And then as the org grows, of course, that starts to break down because there's not that intentional communication and getting very aligned on the mission and the vision. You often see groups go through this phase of starting out as more of like a family. And then as it grows, that there being some sort of crisis and that all breaks down and then they have to be super professional. But I think I learned from one of your speakers, Bobby, this idea of culture is what you reward, tolerate, and repeat. And I love that. Mm-hmm. That's something I've been thinking about a lot ever since I heard it from one of your speakers. And so I like to coach groups on doing an audit and thinking about what are the behaviors that are showing up or the actions in our culture that we don't like. And how are we maybe accidentally rewarding that informally? What are behaviors we're tolerating? What are things we're not repeating? And then doing the opposite of like, what are the things we want to see? Maybe what are our values? How do you live that? And then how can we really reinforce that through even just shout outs on Slack, for example? Obviously who's promoted, the bigger things, but I think the informal things, we noticed at my organization, we were doing a lot of kudos to this person for going above and beyond and doing this work that wasn't outside their job description and like staying up super late. Well, guess what? We ended up with a bunch of employees who were like super stressed out doing a bunch of work outside of what they needed to do because we were sending that signal that that's what we wanted here. So I think sitting down periodically and doing that reflection of that, yeah, what are we rewarding, tolerating, repeating is super helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like, Andrea, you do that on both sides. Like what are rewarding, tolerating, repeating, both in a positive way, but also in a way that might be against like the culture that you're really trying to intentionally set up. And I'm thinking it also requires you to be thoughtful about the culture that you want to intentionally set up to know if those kind of behaviors are in alignment or not alignment.
Exactly, yep. Yeah, a lot of intentional communication too, right? Of like having to think about what am I going to repeat? When am I going to repeat it? Have I been repeating it enough? But it's doing that work up front, I think, can go such a long way in building that alignment and having that strong culture.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to add that I think this also connects to, you know, broader structural issues in nonprofits. You know, one of them being that we sort of touched on before, that leaders may not have come into this work because they are great managers or great organization runners. And so they may, you know, not have the experience or knowledge to think about these things. But on top of that, also, you know, if they're looking at how do you measure performance? Well, it's often much harder in a nonprofit, or it can be harder in a nonprofit because you're measuring to impact versus measuring for sales, for example. You know, and it also, you know, you may have a different skills base in the team. And then also people may have like stronger pull towards, you know, this being their community and their identity. And that means something different as they're, you know, trying to, you know, fit into the culture or develop the culture. And so I think just how the organization is formed and the context it exists in also affects all of this.
Yeah, that is really like a difference, not from all for-profit organizations, but I imagine one of the bigger differences is like the fact that there's this like, I imagine, but you tell me, this like big identity component, like you're giving up a part of something, right? You're working hard for a greater good. It's tied to how you see yourself and your mission and your purpose and all the things, which can have a real upside, right? People can really be committed and really feed into intrinsic motivation. But you've also talked in the past about how a strong sense of belonging can sometimes backfire. What does that look like? What have you noticed?
Okay. Yeah. Yes. I think one of the tricky things here is that, especially in this movement, a lot of these folks, like, they maybe are in their families, they're the one person who knows about the suffering of animals and the food system, and their parents, their siblings, whatever, don't know, don't care, whatever, don't want to have to think about it. So they come to these organizations and then they're surrounded by all these people who see what they see. And then I think that that becomes like, it creates a super tight-knit community. People feel like, oh, I'm around all these values-aligned people. I think you don't get that in a lot of for-profit jobs. Depends on what you're working on, of course, maybe in a startup. So I think that cohesion just starts right away. And it's then if there's a performance issue, I think it can become really challenging. We'll hear managers say things like, oh, but they're so kind. They really care. Maybe they wouldn't, especially in these countries where they're the only group. Like, if we let them go, they will not be able to work for animals at all. You know, it makes it, the stakes feel a lot higher because these people feel that their identity is wrapped up in their work. So we have to do a lot of coaching of leaders that if you really care about this mission and this person is not achieving their goals or they're not the right fit and it's taking so much time for you to get them where they need to be, we have to do a lot of coaching to help leaders see that some people are better off finding other work and that the organization will be better served if you can find a different person. And I think that's really hard. And then when someone leaves too, I mean, the other staff, like I've been through it myself, where they feel like the person died. Like it feels so powerful when they lose someone. And that's something we have to do a lot of communication when someone leaves the organization to make sure people understand like it's going to be okay, like bringing people back together and dealing with those losses. They're hard.
It sounds like a real sense of grief, you know, and like, you didn't say this, but I wonder if there's an element of this, like once you talked about like values alignment, which I imagine that's just really strong. And then also the fact that there's not a lot of opportunity potentially depending on where. So then there's I imagine a responsibility, like, oh, I like care for this person. I want them to be okay. I want them to do the work that I know they're so passionate about. But I also wonder if there's an element, and there might not be, but I'm curious what you think, almost like a little bit of like trauma bonding, kind of like you're seeing these really difficult things, you're reading about it, you're in it together, you're working together to kind of impact. But I imagine that could be another layer of like bond, you know, that's hard to step away from when you're looking at it really from just like a professional lens or like a business lens or an organization lens. Yeah.
I think it's hard sometimes to separate the question of what's good for a particular team member versus what's good for the organization or even what's good for the cause more broadly. And sometimes it can be helpful to pull those apart. I was just in a conversation the other day where someone was saying, you know, we have to make the case for this person to stay at this organization. And, you know, we were able to sort of evolve to the point of thinking, well, hold on a second. Actually, what's better for the impact that you want to have? Maybe you need a leaner organization and it makes sense for this person to take their skills and apply them elsewhere. And if you can't make a case for this person's, you know, job anymore at the organization because it's changing, then that has to be okay, you know, or that's actually better for impact in the long run. But it's not necessarily like the first place that people might go.
Mm-hmm. How do you coach people around this? I'm just thinking, like, I'm in this like sort of CEO support group for this startup world. It's basically like groups for founders, you know, and it started with this accelerator we did and it stayed, continued on for probably like a year and a half now, super helpful. But a founder in the group was really talking about they were growing and in some ways feeling like their partner was, you know, like they're sort of outgrowing, that the partner wasn't sort of keeping up with the next evolution of what this is. And another person in the group was like, well, you just have to let the cards, you as the CEO or the steward of the business or the organization, and you personally have to be okay and reconcile, like you have to let the cards fall where they fall and not try to like change the outcome, you know? But I was like, God, like, how do you even do that? You know, like, especially imagine when you're working with people who are like kind people, I imagine, who are like, I don't know, trying to make well,
what, I mean, what can you do other than try to stay impact focused, right? Stay focused on the picture, on the shared goals of, you know, where you're heading for, but then also, you know, acknowledge where people are at and how it feels. And that that's a hard, you know, thing, and that there might be a contradiction. Other than that, I'm not sure, you know, how you move ahead in those situations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you say, Andrea?
I think there are always ways for people to be involved to some degree, even if they're no longer working at the organization. There's so many organizations that have online actions that you can take from different countries. There are ways that you can continue to help animals. And I think that I like to coach people that when you think about when you've received difficult feedback, when you think about career pivots you've had, if this person's struggling in their role, oftentimes them finding something else is going to be better for them in the long run. Like it's not a great situation when you're in a role and you know you're not meeting expectations and you're getting feedback all the time. If you're not able to, like, in the long run, it's better for everybody to separate. And so I think that's of course, when you get to that point, but that's the kind of coaching I try to do with folks, is get them really thinking about, what does this organization need? What level of development do I have the capacity to provide? That's the other thing. It's like, maybe in a big org, this person could get a lot of coaching, but maybe you just don't have the capacity because you don't have the resources. And then just being really clear with that person of, like, here's what we need and here's what we're seeing. And just like in any other organization, but then having to really manage the grief that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I'm hearing you say too, is that, like, communicating, like, if they're really not, like, meeting expectation, that also requires you as a leader to be giving this feedback in a regular way. So it's not just, like, out of the blue and a surprise, which can add to the chaos of this. And there's so many parallels between just, because all of these, whether it's work or home, it's the relationships, right? So, like, it's a breakup in some way, although it's a professional breakup and can feel, you know, intense in a similar way. And you had said in the past that, like, sometimes just by happenstance, a lot of these organizations have, like, nice cultures that avoid conflict. So what helps cultures really move from that sort of niceness or comfort to really more of, like, adopting that, like, conflict is a natural part of a healthy organization? And how do you help these leaders, like, embrace it?
Well, I mean, this is a topic that the three of us have discussed before, you know, that clear is kind, and under, you know, trying to see that you are doing a service to people it is a service to people to be honest and to help them and to try to figure out ways to communicate what you need to communicate. You can try to help them understand, you know, if you need to have a tough conversation, how you can, you know, can you prepare for it? Can you get help with it? Can you be really remind yourself why you're doing it and why it's important beyond just the moment, the interpersonal moment, but, like, why this matters in the big picture, and, you know, make sure that you're, you know, also giving yourself some grace and understanding that it's hard, but not shying away from it. What else would you add?
I think it's something I've seen, especially with folks who don't have a lot of experience managing, where you think, oh, to build a really good work culture, like, I should be getting a lot of feedback and I should be acting on that feedback. And I think it can spiral into whatever the employees ask for, they get. And I've seen this trajectory happen in a number of orgs that have grown, where they start out by taking a lot of feedback, and then they get to this point where it's like the employees are, like, asking for so many things that are impossible for this leader to give, and we're veering off the values, we're veering off the mission. And I was recently listening to a podcast, and it sounds like this was happening across all industries in the last few years, where it's like this, like, kind of who's in charge mindset. But I think in particular in activist organizations, I've heard some people say that if you don't give your campaigners enough work to do, they campaign against you. And I think that particularly when you're working with activists, you have these people that are okay with going against the grain, are okay with speaking up for what they believe is right, who are comfortable being different, you know, being, like, on the fringe of society or whatever. And I think that's beautiful. Yeah, exactly. Contrarian. Mm-hmm. And I think that's amazing. And I think that makes them really good at their jobs. But it also makes it challenging for a leader, because they need to be very firm in what, like, what is the culture? What are our values? How do we live those here? And for managers who are less experienced, I think it can be very easy to sort of start bending to all the feedback and then be in this culture that it's very unclear. Like, everything is there's no like unity. There's no clear path of this is how we do things here. So I've seen a few organizations that have gone through a big shift where the leaders had to like reorient people on the vision, had to be much firmer in their decisions, be much more clear of like, this is how we do things and this is why. And these are some of the bigger groups. And there's been like a big shakeup where a number of folks have left because they weren't on board. But in the long run, I think that those orgs are a lot better off. And so we try to coach these leaders of these newer orgs to get really clear early on and so that they can make decisions in alignment with their vision so they don't have to go through that huge upheaval and change management process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything you want to add, Liana?
It's interesting also, you know, if you come back to the identity piece, that, you know, when you feel very connected to a community and you feel like that your values are others' values and there's sort of a lot of belonging there, I think it changes how much you want to try to cause friction sometimes. And definitely there are, I think I've seen both cases so far. I'm much newer to this particular space than Andrea, but in general, across my experience, I've seen places where, you know, they are willing to cause some friction, but more often they kind of don't want to. And they don't want to be the one to not belong anymore because the belonging pull is so tough. And so I think it's like, how do you shift it around so that actually, you know, you feel safe enough to say something, you know, difficult or that's going to, you know, need some repair later or need some, you know, dialogue to really work through. And that can be tougher in those situations, but it's very possible. It's very possible. And the best cultures, I would say, have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking, listening to you to speak, thinking about this sort of idea of like that people come into your movement, like their super skill is going against the grain in a lot of ways and having the willingness to speak up and like it's really needed in the job, you know, when you're outward facing. But then how do you also get this sort of group of people who are comfortable in that way to actually bond together? It sounds like they can do that because there's such a shared purpose, like on sort of impact and harnessing that, but that quality exists, right? So if it's sort of unbridled in some way, it can really go sideways. So when it does go sideways, like how do you really help teams find alignment? Especially I imagine like if you see things differently, right? So like if you're defining success like differently. And I remember when we were having dinner, you know, not so long ago, and I was like making the assumption, which was an assumption, that all these different like movements sort of focus on different types of animals would have a really strong sense of alignment, right? Because like you're working for the greater good of animals, but you're sort of explaining that's not always the case because people have different ways of operating, you know? So I know that's like a bigger thing because those are just fundamentally different organizations, but I imagine some of what we're talking about is like playing out in that context too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even within just the small farm animal protection movement, there can be infighting between groups and groups with very, very different ideologies. But then, yeah, when there's this, I forget the word you use, this sort of like a challenge internally of different opinions or this kind of conflict that can arise. I don't know that I'm an expert on it, but the big things that we've focused on is just a lot of communication. Most of these orgs are remote too, so that adds another layer of challenge. And so I think that there just needs to be a lot of communication. This was something that I think helped us at the Humane League was whenever we started to have conflict, we did lots of one-on-one calls, lots of team calls, like just a lot of the leader, Dave, who was the president, I was the executive vice president, but especially Dave getting in these meetings with folks and trying to get people realigned, you know, hearing them, hearing their concerns, validating their concerns, and then getting everybody back aligned. And I think, I don't know that that's always the answer. You know, sometimes people are, you find out that that can't be resolved and that ultimately they want to go a different path. But I think alignment, the kind of going back to the beginning, this being very intentional about your communication, that's usually where you have to go back to. What do you think, Liana?
Yeah, I would even take this all the way back to clarity of focus in what you as an organization are doing and what your goals are and how you do it and what your values are and all of those things. And I think sometimes if, you know, coming back occasionally, I would say that sometimes the conflicts internally can come from there just being a lot of space for, yeah, that person can interpret it that way and that person can interpret it that way. And I'm and we're just going to sort of let that be. And it seems tempting, right? Oh, we're being inclusive. But at the end of the day, there does still need to be a frame for here is where we are all headed. Even if we see it differently or have different approaches to what we're doing. And so I think that making sure that that's very clear, and then being what I've seen in these cases is, once you reclarify that, not everyone is going to stay, and that is fine, because you know you need to figure out who wants to stay and join the reclarified mission and the work as it proceeds, and it might not work for everybody, and that often can like help things too. But if I were to recommend, you know, if there was a crisis and someone was trying to resolve this, I would first and foremost have them look at the clarity. But then you have to think about the communication piece that Andrea was mentioning. And I would think about, how do you use your in-person, you know, especially if you're remote, like how do you use that? And then also, what do you say in the group versus one-on-one? And I would absolutely encourage, as you were saying, the one-on-one conversations, and to think about how you do that first and make sure that everyone gets a chance to feel heard, so that they're not, you know, you're not delivering new information to the large group. You've already sort of worked through people individually to the extent possible. And if you're an organization of 500 people, okay, maybe there's some limits there, but at least you could do small focus groups or whatever it is with like the heart of where the conflict is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting in alignment, I imagine, you know, I can see in our own organization, just like kind of calling it out quickly and using what we talk a lot about in, you know, the classes I teach, are sort of noticing and naming. So just like noticing the friction, noticing the misalignment, and then getting together quickly to just like talk about it, right? And then getting clear around what's sort of the North Star that we're working towards here, that, you know, and then where is there misalignment, and then where is there room to basically take input, and what is just what is, right? And feeling sort of like comfortable and secure in that. But then also giving people, if we look through the lens of intrinsic motivation, like autonomy, mastery, purpose, like where can you sort of give people autonomy or give people opportunity to kind of co-create or make impact without also just opening up like the shop to redo everything, right? And so as a leader, you have to be kind of a clear on what you're doing here or building. And then two, clear where you're willing to like bend and where you're not. And then being explicit about it.
I was just going to add, you know, to your point about autonomy, that also part of this can come back to goal setting and people having clarity in what, not only where the organization is going, but what their role in it is and what the goals are that they have. And if they don't have goals that are clear that they can act on, then, you know, that leaves space for them to feel maybe that there's more ambiguity, or maybe they are also, some conflict can arise because people are more nervous. They're on the defensive, right? Because they don't know how they're going to be judged or assessed, because they don't really know what their purpose is or what they're supposed to be doing in the organization. And so just making sure that a goal is clear enough that they can have the autonomy to act on it themselves. They're going to decide how they execute it and what, you know, what that looks like and how they're going to report back, include other people, et cetera, whatever their role is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the end of the day, so much of it comes back to having to really get into that leader mindset. I think like when you start off as an activist or a contributor and you build an org and you still are thinking of like the daily tasks, getting in the weeds, like so much of it is about having to step back and think about, what does it look like to really lead this org and give yourself permission to invest time in these things that are important but not urgent. Especially when you're working on the stuff that feels so urgent and there's like, you know, lives on the line. In the long run, you'll help more animals. You'll help more of whoever it is that you're serving if you're able to spend that time on the things that are important but not urgent. A big thing Liana and I urge people to do is find a coach, find a mentor, find a peer coach even. This is something we help groups do, because so many of these folks don't have those mentors in their organizations like you might have in the for-profit industry. And then really giving yourself permission to see that as part of your workday. You know, developing your skills mm-hmm. and becoming a stronger leader should be part of your job. And that's my big ask, I think, for anybody listening here.
There's something one of you said earlier, I can't remember what it was, but I was thinking about almost like the isolation of some of these organizations and then some of the leaders of these organizations and how important it is to have people like you to have a community who understands like the uniqueness of it and can kind of coach within it. right? And I feel like in part that's like what you both have created really beautifully is like a space where people can come together. Sure, you might be focused on different types of animals, but actually there's so much intersection overlap between like the how of it and then can create support for each other. So if you could give one piece of advice to leaders really balancing purpose and like kind of performance, the business side of it or organizational side of it, like what would it be?
I mean, it probably was going to be maybe for both of us, Andrea's point about a coach. But I'll say very related to that, someone once told me that an organization's best and worst qualities will map to the leader's mind. And, you know, if you are disorganized, there will be some disorganization in the org itself or whatever it is. And I think making sure that you know what you're bringing to the table, what are those things that are going to map from you to the organization as you lead it, and making sure that you are, you know, realistic enough and humble enough to compensate with other really smart people on your leadership team for those things that you're not going to be as good at. And having a coach help you do that is a great way to figure that out, so it still connects back to the coach. What about you, Andrea?
Yeah, I think definitely getting support is a big one. And I think just like trusting yourself and believing in yourself. I think especially for people without as much leadership experience, I've seen a tendency to question, to doubt, to think, oh, well, maybe this person would be okay because maybe I I'm looking for something and maybe I'm wrong. I think there's so much doubt and just trusting yourself a bit more. It's okay to build an organization that's like your organization and this is how we do things here. I think we try to be like so, of course we want to be inclusive and welcome all different ways of thinking and different kinds of people, but we also need to be very clear about what we are doing. And I think the leaders should feel confident and empowered to make a decision. Of course, you know, with the support of the team, but like make a firm decision and then stick with it and not doubt and not keep trying to change, because that just creates confusion and lack of alignment.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you're also highlighting too is like normalizing the leaders are tasked with making hard decisions with imperfect information. And so making a decision with like the best information you have at hand is okay enough. We're all doing that. You're never going to be at 100% basically. So it's okay to like, you know, sit in that discomfort and still make a firm decision. Well, that was such a fun conversation. I feel like it was really highlighting some of the unique challenges that you face really in the nonprofit space, but also much of what you're talking about can translate so well to like all organizations, because human dynamics are human dynamics and people are people. So these patterns like show up in different spaces. So thank you so much for taking time, both of you, to be here with me today. And I just appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Bobby. This was great.
Yeah, this has been great.
Thanks.